Hey, what up? This is Zach Guilford from Midnight Mass, and you're listening to one of my favorite podcasts, Pop Culture Pastor.
Pop Culture Pastor.
So, Cody, I don't think anything has charmed me as much this week or has fundamentally altered my view on something in the world so much as something I found out about Kate Blanchett this week.
Okay.
Yeah. You ready for this?
I'm bracing myself.
For apparently years, without my knowing, Kate Blanchett has waged a personal war against leaf blowers.
About time.
Okay, so you're in on this. I had not thought about leaf blowers. I don't own a leaf blower. But apparently she brings it up a lot in interviews because I watched a video that you sent me with a bunch of clips. And I started listening to what Kate had to say. And by the end of the video, I was like, are you kidding me? What is up with leaf blowers? Why are these a thing? We take leaves and we blow them over there. What is the point of the leaf blower, Cody? She's right. Kate Blanchett. I just can't believe this. Kate Blanchett has been speaking truth for all these years. And somehow, some way, I just haven't been listening.
Kate Blanchett has waged a war against big leaf blower slash vacuums.
Big outdoor appliance?
Yes. Which I know, like, environmentalists are very much against leaf blowers because, like, especially the gas-powered ones, that they use up a lot more fuel to keep it going. Oh. And then you're just, again, blowing them to one side, and then the wind's going to blow them right back, so you got to go do it again.
Somewhere Greta is furious.
Oh, Kate is making me line up with Greta.
I never thought of it before, but the more I hear about leaf blowers, I'm with Kate Blanchett. I'm just like, well, why? Why are we using them?
So I have never owned a leaf blower, but I've had the leaf vacuum, which some of them are like both, that one side's the blower, one side's the vacuum.
Wait, what is the point of that? How many leaves can you fit? Like, listen, I paid my son $20 to pick up the leaves in our yard, which he never finished, by the way. But there were 20 huge trash bag-sized bags of leaves, and he never got done. How big is that vacuum? How can that possibly be useful?
So I worked for a tree trimmer.
We got experience, so he's giving me his credentials. Cody, master yard work spokesperson.
Yes. 4 years in the biz, yeah. As the kids say.
In the biz.
And, especially if you're trimming shrubbery and there is the wood pellets that are along your shrubbery / flower beds that, like, sometimes if you set it on low, you can get a lot of the clippings without it either landing on the pellets, or you can pick up the clippings after they land in the pellets. And if you like trim a lot of stuff, but there's some minutia that's left over, instead of raking it all, leaf blower it, dump out the bag in the back of the truck, and then load up some more. Wow. So, yes.
This is Pop Culture Pastor, the podcast. My name's Dave. Cody's here.
I am.
And we just used the word minutia.
We did.
Wrap it up. Thanks for stopping by. That's the podcast for this week. We'll let you go. No, that's... listen, clearly I have a lot to mull over here. I have a lot of research I need to do into yard work, into leaf blowers, and just all of this in general. So I'm glad we brought this up right off the bat because this is important information. And no better place for it than Pop Culture Pastor. Thank you to Kate Blanchett for bringing this to everyone's attention. And I'm so sorry it took me this long, Kate.
We are now going to be environmentally friendly and not use leaf blowers.
I want to be a friend, and I want to amplify the voices of the oppressed people speaking against lawn equipment. So
you're welcome.
We will now champion Kate Blanchett's mission against leaf blowers. Can we get her on the pod? Is that possible? Can we play this up? Can we say we are with you, Miss Kate Blanchett? Will you come on the podcast and just speak on the evils of leaf blowers? Do you think we could get her?
I think so. If there was a cause that was worthy.
Everyone loves a cause.
It's this one. And, I mean, Kate was in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, so.
She was. She was Galadriel.
Yes.
The real Galadriel. Unlike this poser. That was a Ring of Power joke.
If we could get her on the show, I would be happy with that as well. So, yeah.
All right, I'm all for this. I'm ready to rap with Kate about the menace of leaf blowers. There was a lot of fun, weird news this week.
I'm here for it.
And so I just thought I would pick out a couple weird news stories, like the I think the Kate Blanchett news would qualify as that because it was just so out there. And then when I saw the proof, like the proof that she brings this up in interviews all the time, and I'm like, how did we bury the lead on this? Why? What? All these news, quote unquote, news outlets were burying the lead. How come we didn't hear about this?
I don't know.
I feel like some documentation should have been sent to my home, maybe some pamphlets.
Instead of Martin Sheen texting me about politics, he could have been texting me about leaf blowers.
Okay. Yeah, I get all the political emails. I got an email from Joe Biden the other day. I'm pretty sure it was him. He said he needed my help. Said he needed my help. Do you get from all the sides?
I do.
I get emails from Republicans, I get emails from Democrats, and they all want the same thing. They all want my money. And then just when I think I'm safe, I get an email from Robert F. Kennedy, and I'm just like, oh, come on! Not you two!
Bobby Kennedy Jr., how did you get this?
Y'all ain't getting any of my money until you're in the government. Then you're getting my money. Because I don't have a choice at that point.
You're welcome.
Taxes are evil. Anyways. Okay. Let's talk about Tom Cruise.
Tomas Cruise.
Tom Cruise is 61 years old. How trippy is that?
He's still an up-and-coming, struggling actor. If I learned anything from last summer, as big box office blockbusters Barbie and Oppenheimer were kicking his movie out of quality screens.
I really hope Tom makes it. I'm rooting for him. I mean, if only we could get some box office success for Thomas Cruise. Just what are we doing here, America?
Exactly.
In all seriousness, let me lay down the context here, because I read an article earlier this week about Tom Cruise's daughter, Suri, that he had with Katie Holmes when they were married, when they were together. She just turned 18. And I thought, oh, this is a nice celebratory article. And I was just wondering whatever happened to Suri Cruise, because I remembered that. I remember. Oh, yeah. Him and Katie Holmes had a child.
And it was a big deal. Like, The Office even had a mention of it in an episode or two.
Yeah, back then, the tabloids were still a big deal. And then, they made a big deal about Suri. And so to see her as an 18-year-old, I thought, oh, great. She looks happy. They had pictures of her, you know, walking around because paparazzi. But she looked smiling and happy. But then I read the article, and then I got unhappy. Because apparently she has no contact with her dad. That did not end well, apparently.
I had heard that.
Because of the Scientology stuff. And I'm not going to get into that. I just wanted to set the context for the article I'm about to read you. Because here it is, Suri's 18th birthday. She has no contact with her father, allegedly, according to an article. I'll say that.
Okay.
And you might think, man, I wonder how Tom feels about that. Wonder if he's sad. And he apparently was at Victoria Beckham's 50th birthday party, which she's 50.
Oh, we're all getting old.
Posh Spice is now Old Spice.
Oh.
No cymbal crash for that? I don't even get a... I don't even get a ayo. I thought that was worthy.
It was, but it was too painful.
Apparently, Tom Cruise stole the show at this party, as he did a breakdance routine that wowed the A-list crowd. apparently 100 guests there. Stunned guests, it says. Gordon Ramsay was there.
Why were they stunned?
Well, I mean, I'm assuming if you see a 61-year-old Scientologist / actor start breakdancing. Did you know he could breakdance?
I have seen him dance and jump on Oprah's couch. I assumed he could breakdance.
A source told the Daily Mail, Cody, that, quote, people were absolutely dumbfounded. So he must have put on quite the show.
I just expect he does that sort of thing everywhere he goes.
I mean, this is also a party where the Spice Girls reunited and did an impromptu of their performance of their 1997 single Stop. So celeb guests included Gordon Ramsay, Eva Longoria, Salma Hayek, Jason Statham, Guy Ritchie, and all of Posh's fellow former Spice Girls, Mel B, Mel C, Emma Button, and Jerry Halliwell. And the gang was all there. But apparently what stole the show was Tom Cruise breakdancing. Which I first, when I read it, I was first also dumbfounded. But then half a second later, I was like, of course. Of course. Of course Tom Cruise can breakdance.
I've seen Tropic Thunder, the post-credit where he's dancing.
Let me ask you something. What level of Scientology do you have to get to learn the breakdancing? I like to imagine they teach that on some level.
I think you got to be in the upper echelons.
It's like the next to last stop. It's like, you know, there's the breakdancing level and then there's the L. Ron Hubbard level.
Yes.
You just get right up in there. It's the next to last stop.
Which we could honestly do What's Up Doc on like a couple different documentaries about Scientology, but we're not going there.
In all seriousness. So when I read the first article and then you sent me this article, I just couldn't stop thinking about not Suri or Tom as individuals. I just couldn't stop thinking about that relationship. As someone who didn't grow up with his dad, product of divorce, I know on some level it's almost unavoidable. And especially if you're someone as busy as her parents probably are, you know. Katie Holmes is a huge fashion mogul. She's not so much in the entertainment world anymore as fashion and that sort of thing. Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise. And all I could think of was like, here's a 61-year-old man breakdancing who was, you know, not invited or it's unclear, just wasn't around for his daughter's 18th birthday. And I thought, just how sad. And so just because I read both of these articles, I just wanted to take a moment and say to anyone listening, hey, call your people. Life happens. I know that. I know that there are circumstances. I don't hold any ill will towards my dad not being around. It wasn't his choice. I mean, you know, it was a divorce. That's what happens. The judge tells you to go as a kid to go one way or the other. And that's what you live with. And all I'm saying is if someone is in your life and they're important to you and maybe there's been some friction, maybe there's, you know, some hurt feelings or whatever, get past that this week and just call them.
Please do.
Just call them because we're not promised tomorrow.
Nope.
And it just broke my heart. I'm reading this hilarious story about Tom Cruise that is incredibly endearing, by the way. I would love to see Tom Cruise breakdancing. Who wouldn't?
I feel I already have.
And all I could think about was his 18-year-old daughter.
Mm.
It made me sad. And so that's what you're getting. You're getting a little recommendation from Dave. Moving on.
Okay.
Because I don't want to stay there too long. Because we're happy.
Was recommendation with Dave.
Yeah. It was like Jerry Springer's final thoughts. Be good to yourselves and each other.
Yes.
Apparently, Cody, there was an O.J. Simpson movie in the works. And they asked Owen Wilson to be in the movie. He will not be in the movie. He turned it down. First of all, were you aware of this?
Not of this particular movie, no.
Okay, first of all, who do we think Owen Wilson was going to be?
He was going to be one of the lawyers.
Oh, okay. not Robert Kardashian. He didn't look like anything like Robert Kardashian.
No.
Was he going to be John Cocker? What lawyer? Oh, Dershowitz. He could have been, because Dershowitz was on that team for a while.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know who he would have been, but he turned it down. And you might be wondering, well, like, what's Owen Wilson doing? Why would he turn a movie about O.J. Simpson down? Seemed like that movie would be probably garner some headlines, probably maybe have some box office attached to it. This is a movie that supposes that O.J. Simpson might have been innocent.
Oh,
all I can hear is the Big Lebowski. That had not occurred to me. That had not occurred to us, dude.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so OJ just recently passed away.
He did.
And a lot of feelings when you evoke the name Ornithal James Simpson. I would just let the case be dead and over and gone and not think about it.
Now, Owen turned it down because he was afraid of what being a part of a movie like this would do to him. That supposes OJ was innocent. Now, listen, in the movie's defense, it is quote unquote labeled a satirical thriller. And the picture's main plot line involves a real life attorney named Douglas McCann, who got sucked into various conspiracy theories during Simpson's 1995 criminal trial. So there's basis for real life here. It was looking into all these weird theories. Like, look, this is we're not a stranger to this.
Nope.
You can go out there right now and find all these conspiracy theories on celebrities who are accused of things. And now it's like, actually he didn't. It was the deep state. And, you know, I'm not going to name them because we're not a podcast about that garbage. But it's out there. We still do this. And they did it. I remember this. And, you know, some people wanted to believe that he was innocent so much. And he got found innocent. Like, look, according to the United States government, OJ was acquitted. Now, he got found guilty in a civil trial, but that's different.
It is different.
So, I don't know. If I was Owen Wilson's agent, I'd be like, no, dude, you want to be a part of this. This is going to get all the headlines. I would watch this movie.
So,
where are you at on it, Cody? Would you watch this movie?
I think that there's a lot of these types of movies where you think, oh, there's a great cast. The story sounds like interesting at least. And they flop. And I would be afraid that this would be a flop.
Yeah.
Just because I know that there would probably be some theater chains that might be like, we're not going to put that in ours. And then also people being like, I don't want to think about OJ or even entertain the potential of him being innocent.
Well, they clearly missed the OJ peak, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there was that, what was that, about 6-7 years ago when the competing documentaries came out?
Yep.
And though, like, by the way, the one on ESPN, I think it was a long 30 for 30.
Yeah, it was like a 2-part.
It was incredible. That was an incredible documentary. Well, very well done. In fact, I just saw it was on one of the streaming services now and thought about rewatching it. I think it's Netflix maybe because they got all the ESPN stuff, the 30 for 30s on Netflix now. And I thought about rewatching it because it was good. But that was seemed like the peak. That was when we wanted more of the OJ story fleshed out. We clearly had that period now. Yeah. Do we really want this? Do many people even... Like, how many millennials, especially younger millennials than you, even really know the OJ story?
I mean, besides if you grew up watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians, because that was the initial push, was this family who's... late husband and or ex-husband and father was on the O.J. Simpson lawyer crew. That was the initial push to why you should care about this family. And yeah. Then, boom.
It was two parts. That was part one. And then the other part was Kim specifically was Paris Hilton's friend. That was it. That was all I knew her as.
And if you read the tabloids.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But initially, though.
Ray J videos.
No. I will. We will not. Don't Google that.
Kids. Do not.
Be responsible with your Googling.
Yes, please and thank you.
Anyways, yeah, the Kardashians are, it's so strange that we've had this foisted upon us as a culture, because literally the only reason they're a thing is because their dad was on OJ's lawyer team, which it says something about how big in the culture that was, that we knew their lawyers. I mean, yeah. Johnny Cochran was impossible not to know, because he was so eloquent up there, like, and that whole trial was on TV. It was on network television.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Yeah. So it's wild how in the culture that was, but I'd probably see this movie. I'm interested. Is this like a, so is this movie like the conversion of his book? I didn't do it, but if I did, this is how I would have done it. Whatever it was called.
I don't think so.
No. But
did you see the video I sent you about Kurt Russell?
No.
So in this video, it talks about how Kurt Russell's just at very random things and potentially has had some like huge encounters with like very big pop culture events. And one of them was the OJ Bronco chase. Him and his family are watching the NBA Finals. It gets interrupted because of the Bronco chase. And Kurt Russell's like, he's heading to his home. And evidently they lived in the same gated community neighborhood. And so Kurt Russell's waiting at like OJ's driveway.
No!
As like everyone's following OJ to his house.
That's wild. That's wild. Can you imagine just Kurt Russell out there rubbernecking? Like just out there. Like, it makes me feel better because I had a neighbor arrested yesterday as I'm recording this. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunate because I don't, you know, like there was nothing violent going on or anything like that. So I don't want to speculate. But I did have a neighbor. There was excitement on my block and someone got arrested. And you feel a little guilty because I'm like looking out the window and then I'm sitting on the front porch. I'm just kind of observing. And then I feel bad because I'm observing, I'm rubbernecking because I just kind of want to know what's going on. Because I actually knew my neighbor. I knew him by name. Mm-hmm. He was kind to me when I spoke to him. So I was interested. I was curious. But then I also felt guilty. But it makes me feel better that Kurt Russell was legit just standing at the end of OJ's driveway in the chase of the century.
The other rumor is that he went camping in Colorado, and it was the time that Ted Bundy escaped from a Colorado prison.
Whoa.
And Ted Bundy, they asked him how, like, he, so Kurt Russell had set up a campsite, had some food cooking. He went somewhere and then he came back and the food was gone.
No.
And they had asked Ted Bundy how he lived, and he's like, well, I found food.
No.
So potentially Kurt Russell accidentally fed Ted Bundy. Potentially.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Has Kurt Russell ever written a book? He should probably write a book.
He probably should. And this is the kind of conspiracy theory, random rabbit hole stuff I'm into, is like these chance encounters.
Yeah. Sometime, not now, but sometime we need to talk about the Woody Harrelson, Matthew McConaughey might be brothers stuff.
Yes.
Because that's also an amazing conspiracy theory with some real legit solid maybe proof.
They need to do the ancestry.com thing.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. All right, Cody, We're going to go out to the lobby. Yep, for answering some listener questions.
If there's some chocolate-covered raisins.
Gross. All right, here we go. Out to the lobby. We'll meet you there.
Welcome to the lobby.
Okay, we are out in the lobby. Cody has his beloved chocolate-covered raisins.
A staple in most theaters across the land.
False. False. We keep them in our lobby just to placate Cody. We make absolutely no money off them because Cody's the only one that wants them.
Classic snack.
Chocolate-covered raisins. Not unrelated to Honey Nut Cheerios. The devil's work. All, by the way, I should mention that Honey Nut Cheerios did not win our cereal March Madness.
I couldn't remember if we even announced the winner.
We did not. It was Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Well, that makes sense.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch won. Roll the music video, Luther Vandross. What's the name of the song that they play in the March Madness? The ball is tipped. You're running for your life. Here now it's here. One shining moment.
It's that one. Shining moment.
Yeah, that's the one. I have to sing through it to remember the titles. But roll it for Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Yay. Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
I will say it probably is the perfect combination of adult cereal / kid cereal.
Yeah, I'd go for that. We're a professional outfit here.
We are.
We took a 4-week interactive experience for our listeners just to announce it, oh, by the way, in the middle of a lobby segment.
You're welcome.
You are welcome. The lobby, we're out here to answer listener questions that you asked us online on social media. So look out for the Ask Us Anything prompts. When you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. And yeah, you'll be able to ask us questions. David Allen from Florida. Since I know you guys love video game movies and TV shows, are y'all binge watching Knuckles on Friday? Or y'all are binge watching Knuckles on Friday, right? Question mark?
Not on Friday.
But I mean, are you going to watch Knuckles?
Well, I feel I need to watch the first two Sonic movies because I haven't done that yet.
I have no plans to watch it, but I will admit that the trailer did make me laugh when he called him Knuckles Cage. That I chuckled a little bit at that. The rest of the trailer, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get to it just because now that Shadow is entering our world, I'm here.
Okay. Adrian Dent from right here in Chanute asks us if you wrote the fourth Indiana Jones movie. She says that other one doesn't exist in parentheses. If you wrote the fourth Indiana Jones movie, what biblical artifact would Indiana be searching for? First of all, Adrian, I am so appreciative that you immediately assume he's looking for a biblical artifact because that's when it was the best.
Although the second movie, non-biblical.
It's non-biblical, but that one's still a good movie, at least.
Yes.
I do enjoy Temple of Doom, but I believe there's something about the groundedness of Indy looking for a biblical artifact that makes it more real while still being fantastical to the audience, rather than, you know, per se, a sundial that helps you time travel.
Yes.
You see the problem there.
Yeah.
So, Cody, does any biblical artifact jump out to you as something? Because he's looked for the Ark of the Covenant and he's looked for the Holy Grail.
So there is one, and I would probably try to tie it in to a biblical place that you couldn't find. Okay, so I'm going with a different ark. Noah's Ark.
Oh, okay. Yep.
But he has to get, and this is non-biblical, so it really doesn't work, but he has to, like, somehow magically kind of find his way into the Garden of Eden.
What if it's just the garden? What if the garden's the artifact?
That was my second thing, but then I'm like, I don't know what you bring back, because then, like, you're like, oh, I got the fruit.
What
it was really a pomegranate, guys.
What if he doesn't know at first what he's actually going to end up looking for? What if the movie starts with the government saying the ark's gone? We had it in the warehouse, and then we went to, you know, move it and found out it was missing. We don't know where it went. We know you're you know, this master person who finds things. You've already looked for this. And, like, you know, even if you did it in the time period where they did the most recent movie, where he's old, like, we need you to go look for the ark. But then he finds out, looking for the ark, that what the people who wanted the ark for, whatever, what they were really looking for was the entrance to the garden.
Ooh.
Huh? Yeah?
That works. Otherwise, I wanted to look for Moses' bones.
Ooh. Is that an artifact to some people? I don't even know.
That's a big, like, ordeal. Like, where is Moses actually buried?
Hmm. Interesting.
Because, like, it says that, oh, he went on top of this mountain and that God buried him after he died. Where, God? Where?
It's not important. Okay. Josh King. Josh Kane, not King. He's not related to King.
Okay.
Josh Kane, before I misspoke, from Springfield, Missouri.
Hello, Josh.
He asks, is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the movie, religious satire? I bet you never thought of that before, because that was the first thing I thought. When I read this question, I was like, oh, I've never thought of that before.
I kind of took it as a religious allegory.
Okay, explain, because this is all new to me.
Especially if you focus in on the island of misfit toys. And that Rudolph is living in probably the most perfect place on the planet, and then, like, gets sent out or leaves on his own will, and then, like, he then becomes the hero bringing light to the world.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, I see where you're going.
There's a few things. I don't know. It could be either way, because there are things that don't quite line up with my line of thinking that probably line up better with the satire and vice versa. So that would be an interesting documentary if someone made it.
Yeah. Like, I feel like if Josh, if you're listening, I feel like we need to have you on, like, to zoom in just to kind of explain, because you clearly have thoughts on it. Otherwise, yes, he wouldn't have asked.
That is a very oddly specific question, so, and I'm here for
it. I think we're both here for that conversation because I'm interested. I just need to know exactly where he's coming from because I've never read anything about this.
Yukon Cornelius is my hero.
Jim Smith from New Jersey.
Hi, Jim.
He asks, he says, you can live in any country except America.
Okay.
I assume that means the United States. Where are you moving to? Any country you want. This is a hard question.
It is.
Like, what was your first impulse?
So it was a split impulse.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking Wales.
What?
Or...
What? Why?
The Vatican.
I don't think they'll let you live there, man.
They let a ton of people live there.
Yeah, but you're not a bishop.
I'm not, but maybe the Pope will recognize me as a biblical scholar.
We had chocolate raisin covered smoke, flavored smoke come out. It means we've elected Cody Pope.
Or maybe I might become part of the official podcast of the Vatican.
Cody's looking for a new job. Will you take me along with you just as, like, an intern or something?
I'm sure I can.
I read
get
all
you
the
there.
Dan Brown novels. I know how it works. That was a joke. Please do not send me emails. That was a joke.
So, yes, those were the two initial thoughts. Otherwise, the realistic one is New Zealand, and that's because of the lack of bugs and snakes.
Oh, okay. We know people from New Zealand.
We do. Kiwis, yeah, as they are referred to.
But they live here now.
Yes.
Nice people. Lovely people. But, yeah, I never thought of New Zealand. My first impulse was Panama. Because like 10 years ago, I read that a lot of Americans, well-to-do Americans, were expatriating to Panama. And there's that part of my brain that thinks, oh, well, if people are doing something and I haven't heard about it, they must be doing it for a reason. I believe is that what the kids call YOLO?
It is. And I actually knew someone that did live in Panama.
Yeah, apparently it's much cheaper. Your money goes a lot farther and you might avoid, you know. Taxes.
I just assume you wanted to go to Panama because of Van Halen.
Well, that's part of it for sure. But that was just my first impulse. Because if I'm really thinking, Israel comes to mind in times that maybe aren't so strife-filled and conflict.
Good luck with that.
Filled, yeah. Obviously, there's probably always going to be conflict in that region. But I've been to Israel, and it's amazing. And people aren't. Like, it's not as argumentative as you might think. There's lots of different kinds of people there, and they all seemed very happy when I went.
I also almost subverted the question and said the Cherokee Nation.
Oh, wow, that would have been, I got you. Ha, I get it.
Yes.
I get it. Not in the United States of America. Got it. So Israel, and the food's great in Israel. But if I had to choose today, and I'm not picking Israel and I'm not picking Panama because those were just impulses, I guess I'm going to go with Switzerland just because it's looks beautiful.
So does the whales.
The whales? Why whales? Not Ireland? Not England? Whales.
Because Ireland has too much conflict and strife.
Okay, that's fair.
My hero, Christian Bale, who played Batman, is Welsh.
So this has nothing to do with your ancestry or anything like that. You're just like, because you like Christian Bale?
And also, I do have some, according to the ancestry DNA stuff, that the Welsh is strong in me. And so, yeah, why not?
All right, man. Cool.
Send me to Wales. And also, I had a professor in college who each summer he would go spend in Wales and would sit in the library, enjoy a Guinness because he was like friends with the heir of the Guinness fortune.
Wow.
Who's a biblical scholar, theologian.
Really?
Oswald Guinness.
Wow.
And so, yeah, he said, oh, it's lovely. Cody, if you want to, we can do this trip. And I'm like, yes, I want to, but I don't know if my finances will let me. Yes. Shockingly, I did not get to go. So,
yeah, if anybody wants to send us to Wales or Great Britain in general, just let us know. That would be – do they have Comic Cons there? Maybe we could get invited to a Comic Con.
They definitely have cons, especially Doctor Who related.
Oh, man. We'd love to go.
We would.
If you're listening in England and you have means
– yes.
Invite us over. We'd love to be the voice of your con.
Please and thank you.
That'd be great. One more question. Jeremy Shields, our friend Jeremy.
Hello, Jeremy.
You can still buy Waffle Crisp. Oh, it's a cereal question.
Oh, sweet.
You can still buy Waffle Crisp, but whatever happened to the blueberry waffle cereal? Early 80s, I remember eating it, but it's just a vague memory now. Is it possible he's being Mandela affected? Because I do not remember the blueberry waffle cereal.
That would be a Google question.
Oh.
Where Cody... being a child of the 80s, I really don't remember the blueberry waffles cereal, but I do remember Eggo having a blueberry waffle that was frozen, which you got to be careful not to eat Eggo waffles and think that they're blueberry flavored, only to find out it's mold.
Blueberry, was it an Eggo cereal? It was Eggo's. Well, that's not 80s, is it?
now I'm feeling like maybe I'm remembering this.
If you know of what our friend is talking about here, let us know, our friend Jeremy. Because all I'm finding, Googling it, is from like the 2000, you know, like apparently this was around in the 21st century. So he's saying from the 80s. And all I can find is Eggo blueberry waffle cereal.
Mm.
So I... We need some of that. If somebody has Eggo blueberry waffle cereal, we'd love to try that too.
Yes.
But if you know specifically of a cereal from the 80s, because I'm not remembering it at all.
Again, child of the 80s.
Oh, wait. Was it Waffalo's? This looks old. Okay, so I'm on eBay. Somebody is selling blueberry Waffalo's, a fridge magnet, but it's the cereal box. And there's a cowboy on the front. It says, hey, partners, free blueberry games on the back of the box. Man, I miss old cereal when they had games and on the box and the prize in the box. And you have to dig through the blueberry Waffalo's.
It was a 1980 cereal.
Okay, so, Jeremy, I have never in my entire life heard of blueberry Waffalo's. I will offer a caveat in saying we were poor and I did not get the sugar cereals ever.
It has a cool-looking mustachio gent on the front of the box.
It's got some good art. It's Purina. Did Purina make this? Is that the Purina logo?
That's what it looks like. And it has a horse underneath the Purina logo. And so now I'm concerned what it's made of.
Jeremy, I think you might have been eating dog food. I'm not here to speculate. But this was... I did not know that Purina was in the cereal game at all at any point. So we'll look into this. If anybody's got any information on Waffalo's, let us know. Okay, Cody, it's time for us to go back into the recording studio.
After I did some investigative reporting.
That was top notch, by the way. I mean,
thank you.
You're basically, some famous investigator reporter. I don't know any.
Geraldo Rivera.
You are basically Geraldo Rivera, except hopefully you won't ever get hit in the nose by a Klansman with a chair.
Hopefully not.
All right. We'll see you in a sec.
Pop Culture Pastor.
Okay. We're back in the studio. The main subject this week is impromptu. This is just one that came to me that I thought we should talk about. Because let me explain to you how my week started. Sunday morning, I woke up. And I had kind of like a dull ache on the right side of my face. Yeah, I know. It's not looking good at that point. And I think as the day goes on, it starts to ache a little more. And the first thought I have is I've had teeth. I had a tooth that I had a root canal on there years ago on my right side of my face. But then I think, well, when you have a root canal, they take out the roots. They take out the nerves. So I shouldn't be feeling any pain from that tooth. But as the day went on, that's exactly where the pain was kind of centered around. And by Sunday night, I was struggling, man. I was really struggling. I didn't sleep much through the night Sunday. And by Monday morning, the entire like right side of my face was like throbbing. You know that it's that kind of a toothache where you feel like you can feel your heart beating in your face.
One of the potential causes of death of King Tutankhamun was allegedly infection from a bad tooth.
Yeah. So somebody posted causes of death in like some European town back in the 1500s or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they kept lists of, they were actually pretty good record keepers, depending on what culture you were living in. And it had all the causes of death, and someone posted, and I was very interested looking at it, but like a good many of them were infected tooth. Yep. That was the cause of death, because you get something in your mouth got infected back then and you were just toast.
Oh, did not have the medicine or the Listerine.
And so all that was going through my mind Monday morning as I'm just in agony and I'm thinking I'm dying. This is it for Dave. Something totally handleable by today's medical standards. And I'm sitting in my office and I'm thinking, it's like 7:30 Monday morning. I'm sitting in my office and I have a dental appointment for 1 week from then, for this coming Monday. I already had one. And you know how it is. You can't get into the dentist. Like, it's like an 8-month wait to get into the dentist. And so I'm thinking to myself, I'm thinking, like, okay, I can do this. 3 hours Tylenol, 3 hours ibuprofen, 3 hours, you know, like, I'm already thinking about the medicine I can kind of put myself, the regimen I can put myself on to try and just grind and to make it. And by 8 o'clock in the morning on Monday, I thought, I'm not going to make it. This is not going to, I am not going to make it. And so I start praying. Now, I know a lot of you listening may not be believers, and that's okay, but we're pastors, and so we pray, and especially we pray when we feel like, well, I'm out of options. I'm in tons of pain, and so I just start praying, and I'm like, God, I don't know what you can do here to help me, but I'll take anything. Help me in any way you see fit. If you want to heal me, that's great. If you want to get me into the dentist office somehow, some way earlier, that's great. Just open doors for me to get me out of this situation, because I don't think I'm going to make it. I don't think I can make it. Cody, literally 5 minutes after I prayed that prayer, I get a call from the dentist's office. Yeah, we had a teeth cleaning cancel their appointment, and we were wondering if you'd like to. Yes! Yes, I'll take it.
Right now.
Yes. And so I didn't say anything else. I just said, I'll take it, because what I was scheduled for was a teeth cleaning. So I go into the dentist's office that afternoon, so amazingly grateful, because I'm at this point, I'm like, this is a low-level miracle. Somebody call the Vatican. This is a low-level minor miracle. It happened. And I walk into the dentist's office, and she's like, I tell him my name, I'm there for an appointment. She's like, oh, you're here for a teeth cleaning? And I was like, no. The whole right side of my face is throbbing. I need attention. And she's like, oh. And so I got in. Long story short, I got in there. This is the weird part, though. The weird part is it wasn't a tooth on the right side. It wasn't what I thought. Now, are you aware that when you have, like, your nerves in your mouth are weird, and that you can feel pain displacement from where it actually is? So they said it's not uncommon for someone to come in and say, yeah, I got a tooth on my lower jaw that's killing me. And then they'll find that it was a tooth on the upper jaw. And the person was like, no, it's lower jaw. And they're like, yeah. Well, what happens is like when the swelling gets up in there, it can put pressure on different other nerves and bones in your mouth, apparently, and it can displace the pain.
I don't like that.
No, it's not cool. Anyways, so it was from a tooth that I got knocked out playing basketball years ago in the front of my mouth, and it has an abscess, and I just didn't know about it. And so now I'm on antibiotics, because you got to get rid of the infection first before they can do their thing.
Go in there and surgery. Yeah.
They're gonna give me a root canal. It's scheduled for May 22nd, but you know, if someone cancels, maybe I'll move up again. Who knows?
Fingers are not crossed, because we don't do that.
No, but a root canal, like, you know, every time you say that, people go, ooh. And it's like, yeah, whatever. I'll just take some of those medicines that make me forget where I am. And no big deal.
Yep.
An hour, and I'll be out of there. I'll have a new tooth, and the nerves will be taken out, and I'll be fine.
A new outlook on life.
Yeah. So no problem. No problem whatsoever. Now, why am I talking about this?
I don't know.
Because when I was sitting there in pain, in between the praying and the minor miracles, the only thing I could think of was that scene in Castaway, where Tom Hanks's character, who's stranded on the deserted island after his plane crashes,
happens to the best of us,
gets an abscessed tooth, and in a moment of desperation, takes a figure skate, which was the only tool he had at his disposal, and basically uses the blade and a rock to pound it into his gum to dislodge the infected tooth. And that scene, I can't even watch that scene now.
What if it was displacement pain and he knocked out the wrong tooth?
Certainly now, dentists must watch that and go, oh no.
Don't do that.
But he could see it, right? He could clearly see that that was the infected tooth, though.
Hopefully.
No, no, no. He could. It's in the movie. They make sure you know that he can see. Like, it show. They show you the tooth.
Well, I'm just saying, maybe you have more than one.
But I got to thinking, because I can't even watch that scene in that movie, and I think it's because, well, I got to thinking about the what are the hardest pain scenes for us to watch in movies. And I think it's hard because we've all experienced tooth pain. Like, it's on some level, most of us have experienced a toothache and how miserable that is and how helpless you feel. And, like, all of that goes into that scene where you're like, oh, man, he's on an island with nothing. It's infected, so he knows he's going to die. And he's in all that pain. And then knowing you got to be you got to just extract it. Oh, that, I can't even, it makes me sick to my stomach just to think about it. And so I can't even watch that scene. I love that movie, but I won't watch that scene.
That's a movie I think I've watched twice.
Oh, it's a great movie.
I don't disagree, but it's like one that, you know the highlights. And if you know the highlights, it kind of takes out the whole impact of the journey.
Yeah, but the journey's great. Like, it's such a great commentary on human connection, how we need each other. But then also it's got, like, something to say about life in general, like the point and meaning of your life.
And about the delivery system.
Yes. It says a lot if you're an employee of FedEx.
Yes.
And that you should be getting all of the benefits, health benefits, you know, just make sure you're covered. And please, your family's covered, because you never know. Anyways, it got me to thinking, what are the hardest scenes for us to watch in movies? And I thought we would just rattle off a few and talk about them.
Okay.
So do you want to go first? What's a hard scene for you to watch?
Anything with teeth is hard for me to watch, and I don't know if it... I have a fear of losing my teeth.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have the dream?
Oh, yes.
Where they're falling out?
That happens occasionally still.
Oh, that's the worst.
Some people are like, well, that's your mind trying to process that you're getting old. And I'm like, I'm not getting old. I am old.
It's my mind processing that I don't want to lose my teeth.
Exactly. But I'll go with American History X. It's a tough scene to watch in general. And it's Edward Norton telling a person of color to bite the curb. Ugh. It's dark movie, but it's an important movie, I think, especially in the culture we have, where we do try to divide ourselves, and dividing amongst race is not good, and dividing in general isn't. By the end of the movie, Edward Norton's a completely different guy, but in this flashback scene, you see calcium flake off when he does it, and I'm like, I can't handle that one.
That's hard to watch. It's hard to watch when it's in human inflicted pain. So Jackson Chauncey, friend of the program, he shared one of his scenes. It's hard for him to watch was from Hostel.
Oh.
If you've never seen Hostel, don't. It's basically about, you know, human kidnapping and then torture, and it's just awful. But someone's Achilles gets slashed.
That'll do it to you every time.
And I just can't even imagine. Can't even imagine. That was awful. But someone else brought up, my cousin Will brought up Saw, and it's the same concept. Uh-oh. Like humans hurting other humans. And
at first I thought you were going to say my cousin Vinny, and I'm like, I don't remember any scenes.
My cousin Vinny said two utes. But yeah, what is it about humans hurting humans that's so difficult for us to watch? And I think the answer to that is obvious, is because we immediately, something inside us says that's wrong.
It is wrong.
And, you know, especially when it's the brutal kind, like the one you just referenced.
Oh,
I immediately thought of First Blood. the first Rambo movie, the one that's like they actually take seriously.
Not Second Blood or third.
But when they're chasing John Rambo through the, you know, the hills and forests of Washington State or Oregon or wherever they're at, somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, he sets up these booby traps. And David Caruso, a young David Caruso, takes like this like spikes to the midsection. And when I watched this movie when I was a kid, and I always like that scene in particular always got me. And I cringed because I just thought, man, he was just out there doing his job. He was just a young guy who was excited about being a police officer. He didn't cause any of the problems. It wasn't his fault. And he gets like what I'm assuming is a pretty, I'm assuming that's a fatal blow. I don't think we ever know. Do we?
What? No. Does he have sunglasses?
No. He does not put on sunglasses at any point and go, well, I guess he's feeling a bit holy now. Dig it down. No, he does not get a cool catchphrase or anything like that.
That's probably why that happened to him.
So yeah, that's kind of what I think of in that vein of painful performance. Yeah. Okay. I have one.
Okay.
Let's just talk about Home Alone 2 for a second.
Any of the Home Alones, really.
Okay, but Home Alone 1 is a Christmas classic that I still genuinely enjoy. But there's something about Home Alone 2 that made me stop watching every Home Alone after that. Like, someone asked me if I watched 3 yesterday, I think. Did I watch Home Alone 3? And I was like, no, I never watched it. And they asked me why. And I was like, well, I don't know.
Different kid.
It had a different kid. But also, 2 really turned me off of being a part of that story anymore.
You don't like the pigeon lady?
No, the pigeon lady's fine.
Well, good. I was going to say
that when she was on Britain's Got Talent, you know, endearing and lovely. But I think it was the pranks, the booby traps get stepped up in that movie. And like, listen, I watched it with my youth group for Christmas on the big screen here at the coffee house. I couldn't even, like, I cringed so much on the brick scene. He gets hit in the head with bricks falling, what, 4 stories?
That is the sound of a tool chest coming down the stairs. But he literally set one of the thieves' hair or hat on fire, and it burns his head.
Okay, but that's not a fatal blow.
It could have been.
It could have been, but a brick to the head, one is probably fatal. 4 is definitely fatal.
He dropped an iron on the other one's head. There is plenty that adds up cumulatively in the first one.
I need some scientific observation of this, because I am pretty sure that Home Alone 2 is much, much worse.
Well, yes, but that's because they learned the formula of, if we make this very slapsticky, kids and parents will LOL. It was the time.
It was the time. So then as kids, we're like running around and hitting other kids with paint cans. Like, what? It was slapsticky. I laughed. Why didn't you laugh? But we were also doing like pro wrestling moves to each other and, you know, giving ourselves permanent injuries.
I saw it for the biscuit.
I saw a kid DDT another kid on the sidewalk once. I'm not even lying.
That's not the place to do that, kids.
No. And now when you watch wrestling, they have like the little disclaimers. Do not do this at home.
They had it in the 90s, but no one paid attention.
That's your generation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for me, Home Alone 2 is one of those movies. I definitely cringe when I watch that segment of the movie, and I don't like it. I don't think I like it.
I enjoy it. It's good. So my next one is, it's not really an injury. It's more torture. A Clockwork Orange, starring Malcolm McDowell as Alex. Alex is getting reformed, and part of the process is having his eyelids pried open.
This movie's so trippy.
He can't blink, and he has to do that for hours.
This would freak out my wife, by the way. Danielle cannot do anything with the eyeball. she can't look at it when it's on screen. And like, for some reason, that's a favorite of like horror movies.
Oh yeah. So that is also something that it's a sensitive, like you have an eye injury, because I can't tell you how many horror movies I've seen where like something impales a dude's eye and then they yank it out and the eyeball's on the thing and it's like, no, quit showing me this. I don't want to see it.
I mean, admittedly, horror movies don't affect me as much. Like, even as much as, like, a Saw or the one that we brought up, Hostel, where it's people hurting people, you know, where it's, like, some supernatural killer. Like, some of those are ridiculous. Even, like, a Final Destination, which was a movie franchise that seemed to delight in trying to figure out the most ridiculous ways that one could die.
The title Final Destination implies that this should have been a one-off. I was furious when there was a sequel.
Is it Final Destination 3? I think it was 3. Might have one of the best death scenes I've ever seen. And it was the one where the guy, they drop like a, they're building a skyscraper and there's a bit like the giant pane of glass they're putting in these big windows and skyscrapers. Obviously would be huge. And so it's like this, it falls, they lose it and it falls on someone, but it looks like it's an invisible something falling on someone. And the special effects on it were just, I remember laughing out loud in the theater and everybody looked at me like I'm the weirdo. Like we're not, like we're not all there watching Final Destination 3. Like, okay, I'm the weirdo.
It's Dave's fault they made sequels.
But some of those deaths in the Final Destination movies were just bonkers, but they were so cartoonish, they don't hit me the same way as some of them does. Like for instance, the movie A Quiet Place.
I've been there.
You've been there?
Yep.
You've been there, like where they filmed it, or you watched the movie?
I watched the movie, and I feel like I have been in quiet places.
Oh, all right. I didn't know what that meant, but apparently Cody is an expert when it comes to a quiet place. The part where she steps on the nail.
Oh, I've done that.
Which, that's kind of a trope in movies, because that happened in Home Alone. Marv. Yes. Or no, not Marv. I get him confused. Who's the taller one?
Marv.
That is Marv. Yeah, Marv steps on the nail, right?
Because Harry is called Harry, ironically.
But Evelyn steps on the nail when she has to be quiet. She can't scream. And that, like, watching that scene is very hard. It's very hard.
I've lived it. I've done it.
You stepped on a nail?
It did not scream.
But you knew it happened.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, take me through this. How this happened? Tell me the story. How quickly did you know you stepped on
that? Oh, instantly.
Oh, instantly?
Yeah.
How did it happen?
I don't remember. I think that my grandparents were having their house roofed. Mm. Well, they were putting on a metal roof. And so they tore off all the shingles and some of the old plywood and stuff. And there was stuff in the yard and missed nail and boop.
Wow. How far did it go in your foot?
Not super far.
So you immediately pulled it off, right? Or yep. Was it stuck in your foot?
It definitely was in the foot.
But it wasn't stuck there.
Oh, like it was still on my foot and I yanked it out.
Oh! You had to go get a tetanus shot, right?
Well, I had just recently had one, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Because you don't want to get lockjaw.
You don't want to, and you get the hydrogen peroxide or rubbing alcohol, whatever.
Doesn't help.
Squirt that on it.
It still hurts.
Well, it hurts more because it's like, oh, this is eating away at the inside of my foot.
Every once in a while, I've never stepped on a nail, but I've stepped on a goat's head. Are you familiar with these? I wasn't familiar with them until I moved to Southeast Kansas.
Are these the sticklers?
Yeah, they're these weird things on some sort of invasive weed.
Yep.
That I'd never heard of till I came to Southeast Kansas. And they drop these things, these spiky things called goat's head. And when you step on them, it makes you feel like you want to die. It's terrible. Like they go through shoes sometimes.
Moral of the story, wear good shoes and thick socks.
It does remind me, the closest I've ever gotten to stepping on a nail was, are you familiar with locust trees?
Yep.
So those are the trees with the branches and they have the big old thorns on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was running once in a friend's yard that had locust trees, a lot of trees, but locust trees were some of them. And I stepped perfectly on like a branch and it like kicked up and stuck me like somewhere around the ankle, but it hit a nerve. Like literally the thorn went into my foot and hit a nerve and it was like blinding pain. It was the weirdest thing. I felt like I couldn't walk right afterwards.
Dave was nearly on the Discovery Channel show, I Shouldn't Be Alive.
Is that a real show?
It was.
Definitely. If they want to call me, we can talk about this because it affected the way I ran for a good 6 weeks, I think.
Ouch.
Yeah, it wasn't cool. Okay. How about Misery? Are you familiar with the movie Misery?
My wife said you have to list this one. And yeah. I'm like, well, I don't know if I have to. I think it's going to get brought up no matter what.
Yeah, so it was one of the listeners brought it up on the post when we prompted people to share what scenes were hard for them to watch. If you don't know anything about Misery, it's based on a Stephen King book.
Which the book has this scene completely different.
Does it? Okay, tell me about that first.
If I'm not mistaken, because my wife said it before I left, but that's been a while ago, that they saw off the ankles.
So let me read the synopsis for Misery. This came out in 1990.
Don't get it confused with Fried Green Tomatoes.
No.
Completely different film.
Yes. After a serious car crash, novelist Paul Sheldon, played by James Caan, is rescued by former nurse Annie Wilkes, played by Kathy Bates. This is like her big star turn.
Yep.
Who claims to be his biggest fan. Annie brings him to her remote cabin to recover, where her obsession takes a dark turn when she discovers Sheldon is killing off her favorite character from his novels. As Sheldon devises plans for escape, Annie grows increasingly controlling, even violent, as she forces the author to shape his writing to suit her twisted fantasies. Now, the scene in question from the movie is not the sawing off, as you said. She literally has him tied to the bed, his feet and legs exposed, and she takes a sledgehammer.
Yep.
And starts pounding away. It's like, ah! Oh, my goodness. This movie messed people up when it came out.
And you know what? I think this movie needs to be remade.
You think so? Remake, reboot, or nah? He says remake it.
Because I think there's such toxic fan culture. It plays.
So you could make it more of a movie of a commentary of toxic fandom.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, there's a documentary out right now that discusses this, right? What's this documentary on Netflix everyone's talking about? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't think I know what you're talking about, because the last one I watched was about 4chan.
Okay, so it's is it I'm a Stalker? No, that's not it. Okay, so it's about a lady and she's stalking I don't know if he's a writer or whatever.
Oh, are you talking
she's
about
she's kind of heavy set
Little Reindeer?
Yes.
That's, it's a series. It's not a documentary.
But it's based on a true account.
Loosely, I think. I don't know how
The writer based it on a true account. Yes. Yeah, his experiences.
Although,
have you watched it?
Unfortunately, I didn't like it at
not
all.
Not good. Not good. But it's not like
some
Misery.
People really loved it. My wife was like, she had to see how it ended, and at times, it made me feel like victim shaming the writer. And I'm like, I don't like being in this place, but like, you have kind of set yourself up for some of this. Not good.
Interesting.
So that might say more about me than it does about the show. Make your own judgments.
I just saw people, you know, memeing it online.
Yes, I've seen a few memes on X.
Okay. Yeah. So do you have another movie that's painful for you to watch?
So this one's a weird one. Requiem for a Dream.
Oh.
There's a scene. Well, it's a series of scenes, but where it ends, I guess, is so the whole movie is about like substance use. But one of the guys is constantly using a needle in his arm, uh-huh. and he knows he has a good vein, and so he keeps using that same vein over and over and over. It gets infected. It gets gnarly looking. End of the movie, they have to amputate the arm.
Speaking of amputation, 127 Hours, we would be remiss if we didn't mention that
yes.
movie, which is the story of Aaron Ralston, who is mountain climbing, falls like into this like ravine, and a boulder falls on his arm mm-hmm. and traps him there. Long story short, spoilers, he's left with a choice, and he has a pocket knife. And nobody's coming to save him, so he uses the pocket knife to cut off his own arm below the shoulder or the elbow.
Keith David is, by the way, in this movie.
Requiem for a Dream or 127 yeah. Hours?
Requiem.
All right, good. I'm glad the Arby's guy still was getting work back then.
Not the Arby's guy,
he says. but yeah, Aaron Ralston, that was based on a true story. That dude's really around.
Yeah, and so is Soul Surfer.
Soul Surfer, another amputee, although that was...
a shark attack.
Involuntary.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was her name? She's a Christian.
Yeah.
I don't remember her name, but she was played by that one actress. We are so informative here. But Soul Surfer, based on a true story about a surfer. She's a professional surfer, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. And now that I have it pulled up, Bethany Hamilton.
Yeah. And still a professional surfer, by the way. At least she was. I don't know. She's probably getting up in age now. I don't know when professional surfers retire.
They don't retire. Ride a major wave out into the sunset.
Is that what happens? I know. They're like Enoch. They go to surf with God.
Yeah.
Okay. So Requiem for a Dream. That's a good choice. One of the hardest things for me to watch is anything to do with body horror. And I remember back in the 80s, HBO was just showing things during the day that would be sure to scar us for life.
Should have been watching HBO.
I know, probably not, but it was the 80s, and we did that sort of thing. Nobody cared about what we were watching. There was a movie that came out in 1986, starring one of our favorites, Jeff Goldblum.
Jeffrey?
Yeah, it's called The Fly. When scientist Seth Brundle, played by Jeff Goldblum, completes his teleportation device, he decides to test its abilities on himself. Unbeknownst to him, a housefly slips in during the process, leading to a merger of man and insect. Initially, Brundle appears to have undergone a successful teleportation, but the fly cells begin to take over his body as he becomes increasingly fly-like, or the Brundle fly. Brundle's girlfriend, played by Gina Davis, is horrified, along with the viewer, as the person she once loved deteriorates into a monster. So yeah, he starts like slowly turning into a fly, and there's this like, his body's falling apart, man. It's like super realistic, and for a kid, it was too much. Like, it was so gross, and there's this one scene where he starts yanking off his fingernails. Oh,
so
I'm getting a little sick just thinking about it.
That is another one of those areas that if you show fingernails being plucked or like them being dragged across the landscape and trying to hold on, and then their fingernails come off, like in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the new one or newer one. Yeah, you have nails falling off or bleeding. Ugh. I'm out.
No. Yeah, that's horrifying. I had a, so that's even worse for me because I had bad ingrown toenails at some point back when I was younger in like my upper teens, low 20s. And I had to go in and get like real surgery, like to get my nails taken out. And they didn't, the doctor didn't wait long enough or give me enough like deadening agent, like in my toe. And he starts like yanking out my nail and I can feel it. And I'm like pounding the bed or whatever you're on, whatever they call that. I'm like screaming and pounding. I'm like, I can remember the doctor clearly. This is what he said. He's like, you shouldn't be feeling this. You shouldn't be feeling this. I'm like, I can feel it. Like I'm screaming, bro. And so, yeah, I don't deal well with that. Cause I've actually felt what that feels like with someone ripping your nail out.
Back in the day when I was a tree trimmer,
this is the second time this has come up.
I was carrying a stump that had an offshoot on it. So I had one hand on the offshoot, had the other hand at the base of the stump, was carrying it to throw it in the truck. Well, the offshoot broke off, and so it got top heavy, and it fell out of my hand, crushed my big toe, and like... it created a blood bubble underneath my nail, and that nail just died off to like the bottom third of it, and then it grew back out. But that was a real thing.
That reminds me, have you watched Fallout? Have you started watching that at all?
No. Not yet, but...
there is a scene in there where a guy gets his foot stepped on by a large robotic metal-suited guy. And they show that later on, the damage to his foot, and it's completely unnecessary and ridiculous and awesome.
It fits the video game.
It's all of those things. Do you have any more scenes you'd like to share?
So anything from like Evil Dead Rise, just going to throw that out there. Mm. There's even like, I'm not even going to talk about. Just watch the movie if you're into Evil Dead stuff, which my wife is and I am. But I'll go with a more humorous one to keep with the Keith David. Something About Mary. If you know, you know.
It's got that maybe the best Keith David line ever. Where he gets mad. He's getting mad at him because Ben Stiller has hurt himself. And he's mad. He's like, whoa, how'd you get the beans about the Frank? So good. Maybe the best Keith David line ever. I love because it's so relatable about like, cause you know, when you, especially people, when you have kids, this is relatable when you get mad at them for hurting themselves.
Yes.
Well, what were you doing? You know?
But yeah, that scene, it's unnecessary.
It completely, but hilarious.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
Probably because of Keith David, so.
Yeah, yeah. I get sad when I think about comedies because they might not come back in our current state because also they're vulgar. Like some of the funniest ones were super vulgar and I'm probably not the same place I am when I watched them.
Yeah.
So I'm not super, you know, wanting to put myself back into that place, even though I remember them as funny. But then there's the other part, which we've already talked about on an older pod about comedy itself and about how like comedy is only good when we're making fun of ourselves and we're not in a place where we can do that in our society.
I'm there.
We're not humble enough. We just can't do it. We're there. We're super humble. That's what we say all the time. I'm the humblest guy.
Kendrick Lamar was trying to get you all to be humble years ago.
Okay, one of the most iconic scenes I could think of when it comes to pain. Bruce Willis in a little movie called Die Hard.
I have heard of this one.
So in Die Hard, he's there at a Christmas party to try and patch things up with his estranged wife. He's in a room. So like there's a hotel room in the building because this is like a super fancy corporation. Right. And he's in a room and he's all like, what you do in a hotel room? You get comfy and things start popping off and he has to leave that room when he figures out what's going on, but he does it barefoot. So in this whole entire movie, John McClane, Bruce Willis's character, is fighting terrorists barefoot. well, the terrorists figure that out when they've got them trapped in this room. And my guy, Hans Gruber, when they've got him pegged in, he remembers that this guy was barefoot, and he says, "Shoot the glass. Shoot the glass." And they shoot out the glass, and then they roll a grenade or a bomb in there, and he has to make a choice. And his choice is to run over the broken glass barefoot to get out of there.
It's what real men do.
Oh, that scene. I remember the first time I saw that scene because, like, again, it's relatable. A lot of us have probably stepped on something. You stepped on a nail. I've stepped on a piece of glass. That's not fun.
Nope. And to think Snape was doing this all those years ago.
Man, what a wonderful, wonderful actor he is. What's his name? I can't think of it right now. I'll look it up.
Alan
Rickman. Yeah, Alan Rickman is a wonderful actor. He's great in this scene, but that scene's iconic because immediately you see that you're in it with Bruce Willis. You're in with John McClane, and the choice of, like, oh no, he's going to have to run over broken glass and just massacre his feet to get out of this situation. He has no choice, and he does. And he's, like, bleeding profusely. He has to, like, wrap cloth around his feet. Remember, that's when he calls Al, the cop down there. He's like, "Listen, pal, I don't think I'm going to make it. Will you tell my wife?" He's like, "Don't you do that. Don't you do that."
Bruce, extremities bleed a lot, buddy. You'll be okay.
Man. But that scene is both, exactly exemplifies what we're talking about. Just the pain aspect of watching something like that, but also super iconic scene in an iconic movie.
So I have three more, but I'm just going to list them rapid fire.
Go for it.
And they're all emotional pain.
Oh, okay.
Because I went deep.
New kind of pain.
So the son in Jojo Rabbit, when he finds Scarlett Johansson in the town square with the noose around her neck.
Don't you do this to me. Why are you doing this to me?
That one, oh my goodness. Like, the whole movie is played for laughs, and, like, then you get super serious, and it is emotional damage. Toy Story 3, the incinerator scene, I cried. I was in college. I'm like, I'm not ready for this. Too emotional. And then one of my favorite movies of all time, and I'll say it, it's my favorite Jim Carrey movie, Eternal Sunshine, The Spotless Mind. As his memory is being wiped, he's trying to not have it be wiped. He realizes that he was just upset with Clementine, and he's like, "Don't erase this memory." And, like, he is replaying all these heartfelt moments, and oh, emotional damage.
Yeah, those are tough. I think the only one I can think of like that is one of my favorite Spielberg movies that a lot of people don't talk about, Empire of the Sun. Young Christian Bale.
Welsh.
Yeah, he's Welsh. But it was his star turn as a child. And he plays a kid who ends up in a POW camp in China held by the Japanese in Hong Kong, or right in that area. And he's obviously malnourished. He's separated from his parents. He's in this camp where he's kind of come under the care of this doctor who's also a prisoner in the camp. And the Americans, or the Allies, do a bombing raid on the camp. And so these American planes are flying around, which he had previously in the movie expressed being a fan of the P-51, the Cadillac of the sky. And so he climbs up to the top of these buildings when all these planes are flying around dropping bombs and firing, and he's yelling, and he's like, "P-51, Cadillac of the sky," and he's just losing control of his emotions, and he's excited, and the doctor sees him at the top of this building, and so he runs up to get him, and he's trying to shake him and get his attention. He's like, "Jim, we have to get down. You're in danger. You have to get down." And his expression, when he finally shakes him, and his expression, the doctor gets him to lock eyes with him, his countenance goes down, and it gets quiet, and he says, "I can't remember what my parents look like." And it's, I mean, the emotion in that scene, in that moment, and there's a few in that movie. That's not the only one. oh, I just weep. And the doctor starts weeping, right? He just holds him. He hugs him in that moment. Because, like, what a terrible thing to have to hear a child say. And it was just the emotional damage.
Oh. Yes.
Anyways, what scenes are like that for you? That emotional pain, physical pain. What scenes are the movies where you cringe, you can't do it, makes you feel sick? Please share with us on the posts for this episode of the pod. Of course, as always, please subscribe to wherever you're listening on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. Now we're on YouTube, Good Pods. Make sure to subscribe, review us when you can too. Give us a good review. That helps as well. And yeah,
do it.
We'll see you next time. Thanks you so much for listening. We're about community here. The world is going to try and divide us for what we don't have in common. Remember that the things we do have in common are actually there's way more of them. And so we're interested in focusing on the things we have in common. Most operatively, a love for pop culture.
And sometimes identifying we all share in pain.
I thought you were going to say chocolate covered raisins, and I was just going to stop the recording. I was just going to be like, that's it. I'm done.
No, not going there.
Nobody shares that with you.
Some people.
All right. We'll see you next time.